we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatments of animals.
The less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, March the 9th, 2018. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by our co-host, Sinead Sanders.
Hello.
Our observing guests, Susan the Sticker from Port Hardy.
Hello.
And our control room operator, Amir Ali.
Good afternoon.
And my sister, Leanna Cole from South Dakota.
Hello.
Welcome, everyone. On today's show, we have two great interviews for you. For our feature interview, I am pleased to have vegan activist, food reporter, mom, and social media star Erin Ireland here in the studio. She will be on the show to speak with us about her vegan lifestyle, the bias in the mainstream food media, and what it's like to love and promote vegan food every day to thousands of followers, and tips for being a mom to a beautiful one-year-old vegan child. That interview is coming up in about 8 minutes, so please do stay tuned. For our second interview, we will welcome back animal rights lawyer Anna Pippas from the nonprofit organization Animal Justice. There have been a lot of issues happening to animals in Canada lately that our legal system should be addressing, such as the killing and eating of a rescued pig named Molly on Vancouver Island several weeks ago. Anna will be on the show to tell us about why this is legal and how Canadians can help to repair a broken system to improve on protections for animals. But first, I want to welcome our very special guest, my sister, Leanna Picard, who is visiting here in Vancouver right now. I called you Leanna Cole. Are you Picard or Cole?
You're both. I'm Picard now.
You're both to me. You're all the way from South Dakota, and it's been a long time since you've been back home here in Vancouver. Almost 2 years. You've been planning many activities in your trip to get the most out of the vegan and animal rights scene while you're here, but maybe that's because you're lacking in South Dakota. I don't know. So what is the vegan scene like in South Dakota these days, Leanna?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. You know, I think since it's the Midwest and animal agriculture is a lifestyle for many people there, or they know someone whose livelihood is from raising animals for consumption, you think veganism hasn't reached out there. And in some ways it hasn't, but vegans do exist in South Dakota. Although there are many small towns in the state that I've traveled to where it seems veganism is non-existent. But I live in Sioux Falls, which is the largest town in the state. The population is 180,000 in the town, but 250,000 in the region. So I feel fortunate to be living where the mainstream exists for the most part, and veganism is becoming more and more mainstream. So there are vegan products at our local big chain supermarket, and we have a health food store as well as a co-op, and even Target has many plant-based options now, as well as Costco and Walmart and Aldi, another supermarket chain. So grocery shopping wise there are many options, and there are even restaurants that have vegan options, like vegan pizza with veggie meat and cheese, black bean burgers, acai bowls, and smoothies. A bakery we go to often started offering a delicious vegan sandwich with white bean hummus and veggies on focaccia. It's so good. And a coffee shop we like to hang out at started having a vegan baked option. Good. So I think there's still a lot of growth to be made in the movement there, but even in the Midwest, it's moving more and more in that direction. Oh, there's a Facebook vegan and vegetarian group with over 300 members. So that's always nice to feel connected to others in the community. I like to just give a shout out to some awesome vegan ladies in South Dakota who I know, Carrie and Louise and Stacy. They are out there doing protests and bake sales and speaking up for animal rights, and they're just amazing.
You're out there as well, Leanna, and I'm really proud of you because you are very introverted, but not only that, just because you're introverted, it doesn't mean you're shy, but I think you're very shy to speak to people, and I'm wondering wondering if you can speak on that. We attended the Vancouver Chicken Save Vigil last week, and I know you've been to a protest with me here in Vancouver before where we were chanting and yelling, and and you said that felt really good to get that out because you're so used to being quiet all the time. So you talk about, I know you want to get more involved with activism. You have been doing so in South Dakota in the last year. What are your challenges to being an introverted activist?
Well, at this point in my journey, I'm really intrigued with engaging with people in conversation and hearing their point of view and discussing animal rights and the ethics around using animals for food, clothing, or entertainment or vivisection. My challenge is that I don't feel confident enough to approach people, and although I'm a good listener and able to verbalize my stance on these issues, it's just difficult for me to like put myself out there because I'm just more comfortable with observing. So I've been watching videos of activists who do this type of outreach, like Earthling Ed, James Aspie, and Joey Carbstrong, to help me as a starting point to this type of activism. I'd also like to start a pig save in the town I live in, where there is a slaughterhouse, and I've emailed the Save Movement to help with getting started. But introversion aside, it's been challenging to find the time to do this. But this is why I'm like really looking forward to attending the Animal Liberation Conference in May in Berkeley, California, for 1 week, and that's with you.
Yes, DXC, Direct to Action Everywhere, and the Pig Save Movement, which is an international movement. They're going to be there, and they're going to be giving us training and you training on how to get your group started. So I wanted to talk a little bit more about that. You want to start a pig save in your town, and you decided this past fall to go visit a slaughterhouse to check out the scene there, a local pig slaughterhouse in Sioux Falls. Can you tell us about what you saw when you went to that slaughterhouse?
Yeah, it was on Thanksgiving in the evening that I went, so it was completely shut down. No one was around. So I was walking along some of the perimeter of the slaughterhouse and took pictures, and there really wasn't much to see. I continued walking, then across the street saw a transport truck backed into a warehouse, and then I started hearing the pigs, and it was awful.
Yeah, you sent me that video, and I have to say I still haven't watched it all because I burst out into tears in like the first 2 seconds. Having said that, it was a very important video for you to take, I think, and that's something that Bearing Witness is all about, and I think that's why it's so important to get that pig save started in your city where there is just, like you said, it's right downtown, right? And the city stinks all the time, and people know, oh, it's just the slaughtered pigs, but they're not making that connection and actually realizing that they could do something to change that if they wanted to. And it starts with your food choices. I'm wondering, we're going to repost that video on our Facebook, so look for it today or tomorrow, Animal Voices Vancouver. But could you, you know, the words that you put to that post were really touching. I wonder if you could read what you had said in that post.
Yeah, so I posted a video of the transport truck, and you can hear the sounds of the pigs as they are being unloaded. This is what I wrote. Last night, I witnessed horrifying sounds coming from a transport truck at the slaughterhouse. Seems the pigs were being unloaded. I've heard these sounds many times in footage I've watched, but to hear it in person was traumatizing. I started hyperventilating and crying, and I was shaking. As I walked away, I heard even louder squeals and high-stress, torturous noises. This is the world we live in, and this beautiful town I live in is tainted by this place that in some days makes this town reek with a stench so putrid it makes you want to stay inside. It's our choice. Lower the demand, and in the future, the world will be a better place for future generations to live in.
Well, thanks for that. So on a bit of a more of a brighter note, you've been, like I said, we've been doing so many activities while you've been here. Yeah. We're going to the Happy Herd Sanctuary this Sunday. And last week we got to meet an internationally famous celebrity who lives here. Sinead's going to tell us about that.
Yeah. We got to go and meet Canuck the Crow. So we've had Canuck's human friend on the show before. Canuck lives in East Vancouver, and he's become something of an institution because he was found when he was young. Basically, humans helped raise him. He was orphaned, and he just got used to humans, and so he would approach humans in the neighborhood, and so this guy, Sean, he sort of got attached to, became his friend, and Sean started this Facebook page to raise awareness and say, this crow is not attacking you, he's just curious, you know, and so we got to go meet him. And we did that right after going to actually the Vancouver Chicken Save Vigil at the Hallmark Slaughterhouse. So we went straight from seeing these birds, these chickens, who were crammed into these crates and basically suffering immensely and on their way to be killed needlessly and literally for consumer dollars. And then you just go a little further down Hastings and here's this bird that is internationally celebrated. Mm-hmm. It was nice to see the birds flying freely after that, but it's also just jarring the indifference compared to the intention and the money raised to help protect Canuck and his health, and compared to the indifference that people have toward birds in slaughterhouses. And So, I would just invite anybody who's a fan of Canuck the Crow or any bird in particular to extend their compassion and empathy to the birds that are suffering needlessly behind the slaughterhouse walls, and literally only because consumers keep paying for it. So we have the power to change these things.
Yeah, and Canuck, by the way, is a really cool dude. After waiting for quite a while, he finally made his celebrity appearance, and he took a great interest in your Vancouver chicken sandwich.
Yeah, that was the thing. He just, as soon as he landed on the grass in front of us, he went straight for my Vancouver chicken save bag. So I thought, well, he's smart. He doesn't know how to read English, but I feel like if he could read English, then he might appreciate what Vancouver Chicken Save does.
Thanks, Sinead.
Les Rendez-vous de la Francophonie is an annual celebration that promotes the French language, heritage, and its numerous cultural expressions. For its 20th edition, Les RVF has a special all-day marathon of 20 radio shows promoting diversity, linguistic duality, and celebration of all things Francophonie, heard right here on this station. For more information on this year's Rendez-vous de la Francophonie celebrations, in partnership with the Canadian Foundation for Cross-Cultural Dialogue and the National Camps and Community Radio Association, visit www.rvf.ca.
Our feature interview today is with local vegan activist, food reporter, and social media star, Erin Ireland. You may know Erin from seeing her as a food reporter on TV, from following her blog at todiefor.ca, from tasting her delicious banana bread that she makes for her business, To Die For Fine Foods, or from her very popular Instagram account in which she shares delectable photos and recipes of amazing-looking vegan foods. Erin is here today to tell us more about her vegan lifestyle, food reporting in the media, and what it's like to be a vegan parent. And her dog, Effie the vegan dog, is here today too. Thanks for bringing her, Erin.
Oh, of course. She comes everywhere with me.
Well, that's great to know, because we love dogs at Animal Voices.
Of course.
Thank you for coming on the show today to speak with us about these aspects about your vegan life. So to begin, I would love to hear about your vegan story. That is, how did it all come together for you to start on this journey? I understand it was about 4 years ago. What was your relationship with food back then?
So I was a huge carnivore for my entire life, and it's funny. I feel like most vegans have said that at one point, or have said at one point that they could never go vegan. So mm-hmm. I was truly one of those people who really never pictured that. But for me, I think that it's a pretty boring story. I feel like so many people probably share a similar story. It was a documentary. It was Forks Over Knives,
right.
That kind of first planted the seed. It was just so obvious. There are so many studies that show a plant-based diet, it doesn't just prevent disease, it can reverse it. So I couldn't deny that. And I didn't go vegan overnight, and it's funny because looking back, I can't believe that I didn't, but I think that's what makes me a little more understanding of people who do have a bit of a slower journey, and that's a big part of my activism, is to not judge and understand that we're all different and that we all have different paths.
Yeah, I think, you know, I always say that most of us, I always say we are all born vegan, we're all born with compassion, but then our parents fed us meat and dairy, so we weren't vegan, right? But
exactly. The meat and dairy industry, I mean, they have so much money, and they've done such an amazing job of marketing this to us. And I mean, they've infiltrated the education system, and in schools, we're taught that we have to drink milk to have strong bones, and we have to eat meat to get protein. And so, I mean, I can't blame my parents or their parents for, getting us hooked on that stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. So as a food reporter, I watched your TED talk, your TEDx talk that you presented in 2015. I would encourage our listeners to watch it. It's on YouTube. It's posted on our webpage, animalvoices.org, as well. And I'd like to talk about some of the points you raised there. The talk was entitled, "Is There a Bias in Our Food Media?" And the answer is yes, there is. But you know what? It's never talked about within the mainstream. So thank you for bringing it out there in that TEDx talk. That was great. So I want to talk about what you discovered in your research that proved that there is actually a strong bias for meats over plants in the food media.
It was unbelievable to actually look closer and count how many times meat dishes are featured in these shows and magazines versus plant-based dishes. So I looked at the most popular shows and publications and TV food show hosts out there. So it was the TV show Chopped on Food Network, the largest food magazine, Taste of Home, and Rachel Ray, food show host. And in every instance, so I did the math. I was looking at all the shows and all the dishes that were featured. Over, on average, I believe it was over 90% of the time meat dishes were featured. So, I mean, it's just so ironic that they are pushing this stuff when, I mean, people are already so hooked on it. I think it really just speaks to, again, like the advertising dollars that are behind these shows. And it's just crazy that, you know, all the people involved in these media outlets, you know, can't give plant-based food some of the spotlight. I mean, 50% even would make a huge difference. And media is like word of mouth on steroids. So that's actually one of the reasons why I went vegan. Is I had started a food blog, and I mean, back in the day, back when I started my food blog, even in my biography, it had written my favorite food was like steak and tuna. Just to say how into it I was.
How does that make you feel now to see
I'm okay to put it. It's embarrassing because I was so ignorant. And I just can't believe it. Like, I can't even believe it was me, because my whole life I have been an animal lover, and like a very, very, very out there animal lover. And I just never made the connection. And that's another reason why I feel like I'm pretty empathetic with my activism. I'm pretty gentle, you could say. I mean, inside I am like burning with passion on this topic.
Because you've been open to it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I realize that it's hard with all these forces working against us, like these magazines and the TV shows where we see all this meat and it just seems normal. And it's, you know, it's meat. It's not flesh. It's not an animal. You don't see actually what went into the production of these dishes. It's lasagna. It's prosciutto. It's, you know, hamburger helper, whatever.
And it's really glamorized too. When people say prosciutto, it's supposed to be, I don't know, some fancy sliced up pig or something.
Yeah, that's prosciutto di Parma. And
you know all the terms. I've been vegetarian basically my whole adult life, so I've never bought meat. I've never made meat. I don't really know the meat terms, but as a foodie yourself and food reporter, you know all this stuff. It's really must be juxtaposition for you to, you know, that's in your history, and then and now you're new and reborn, I guess.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so you do have that perspective of what it's like to come from that world.
Yeah, and at one point I even thought to myself, there's no way that I will ever be able to go fully vegan because of what I'm doing. I thought that it would be limiting. I thought that I wouldn't even be able to keep my food blog going. I thought I'd have to have a change of career. But what's so funny is that connecting with my morals and values and living in alignment with them has actually, I think, helped my career take off. I mean, I feel like I'm too busy these days. Like, there are too many opportunities, and things are going great with my vegan baked good business as well. And I really think that's because I love what I'm doing, and I truly believe in it. And you can see that.
Got to follow your passions.
Exactly.
One of my passions is your banana bread, by the way, which I discovered this week.
I actually feel really bad I didn't bring some.
Well, Leanna brought me a piece this week, and we were going to see a movie, and I had forgotten my popcorn, which I was so excited about. I was going to go take it and eat it for dinner, and I'm like, I forgot my food. She's like, I have Aaron's banana bread
for you. Amazing. Yeah. I'm going to start you up. Really, I'm going to come back and drop some off, and some Powerballs and some breakfast cookies, which are our newer product. So we're really going big this year. Like, the plan is to really expand things, offer a full line of baked goods, because, I mean, this business started 7 years ago in my small apartment. I was baking one loaf at a time. And I mean, throughout the business, I've gone vegan, and everything is now vegan. And so my goal is to replace all the factory farm dairy and egg filled items on cafe shelves with, you know, better stuff that not only tastes better, but it's better for the environment, better for our bodies. And I mean, I don't think people can tell, you know.
Well, banana bread, bananas are the egg replacement. You don't need eggs in banana bread. That's one thing you do not need eggs in. And you know what, as a banana bread lover myself, and when I have a craving for one and I'm going going to like all the coffee shops and all the stores, I'm like, oh, it's not vegan. I kind of know the few places now. And then I saw your website this week. There's actually tons of stores that you sell it in.
Yeah.
And one of them, I did see it at UVC where I live. So nice. At least I know I can get it there. So, but yeah, like just to be able to have those options, I'm so grateful that you have so many places that you're getting it out to, because I want to infiltrate Vancouver with vegan products.
Me too. And I'm so grateful to my vendors for carrying it. And I mean, even when I made the transition, I was kind of wondering if people would drop us, and I think there was just one cafe that dropped it.
They're losing out.
I agree. Yeah, I don't know.
And Susan and I this morning for breakfast went to the juice truck.
Did you?
I got your breakfast cookie.
Oh,
so I can't wait to try that.
Oh, I hope you like it. I love the juice truck. That's one of my favorite spots.
Susan does too. Yeah. She loves
as
it
of today
too.
Or as of yesterday.
Yesterday. Yeah.
As of yesterday. It's her favorite new place. So what message would you like to share with the mainstream media when it comes to choosing the kinds of food to report on? Because I really feel like society is shifting towards plant-based veganism, but the food media isn't. What would you like to say with them?
I feel like they really need to understand what it is that they're promoting and realize that, you know, eating animal products is one thing, and I mean, obviously I don't agree with that, but putting it out there for your X number of followers is another thing. Social media is like word of mouth on steroids, and so if you're putting it out there, you really need to believe it's okay, and you really need to learn about it. So I think that, I mean, everybody should watch documentaries like Forks Over Knives, and the other documentaries that really really led me to go vegan are Earthlings.
Yeah. And free on YouTube and Vimeo.
Exactly. Cowspiracy and What the Health and Eating You Alive, and some new ones that I'm really excited about, Dominion coming
I've
out
heard
soon.
Of that coming out. Yeah.
And Eating Animals. There's so many great documentaries out there. We're actually screening one on Monday night here in Vancouver.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. So speaking of films, I want to talk about some of your favorite books as well.
Yes.
What books would be on the top of your list that people should educate themselves with?
One of the first books that I read on the topic was Project Animal Farm by Sonia Faruqi. She's based in Toronto, and she was in the investment industry, and she quit her job to go volunteer on this organic farm, and what she discovered shocked her to the point where she actually started just like taking notes, and she ended up writing a book about her experiences, and she traveled all around the world. And so she's just such a like an independent source of information, just a single woman, and it's amazing and so eye-opening. Also, How Not to Die. It's my Bible.
Dr. Michael Greger.
Yes, it is. I mean, on my coffee table, I'm not even
it's
like
on my coffee table too.
I just want to share it with everybody. Anybody who's not vegan who comes over, I want them to have it.
And it's a good paperweight too.
Yeah.
It's really big.
Yeah, it's so valuable. I learned a lot of things from that book, even though I've been vegan for, my transition to veganism actually started in 2012, and I think I was fully vegan a couple years after. But I've learned so many things from reading that book. Another book, obviously, The China Study. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody's favorite.
Dr. T. Colin Campbell.
Yes, and Diet for New America. Super old, but
that's the book that I give to everyone. John Robbins. He's my hero.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's kind of old school.
It's
still relevant.
It's
I buy them in thrift stores and I give them out to people. And
I love,
Food Revolution as well.
Should do that.
Yeah. So I know you're a very popular blogger and Instagrammer. Leanna's always sending me your Instagram posts because I'm not on Instagram yet. And you've also been a television presenter. So I'd like to talk more about your influence in the food and social media world. So what is your aim with your presence in the media and how you promote plant-based foods and veganism? And what do you wish to achieve with your food activism?
So I just want people to see how easy it is. I really feel like we just need those visuals. A lot of people think that vegan food is, you know, includes ingredients that we've never heard of before. All this weird stuff, mainly seaweed, right? And kale and tofu, but that's not it. So I think by showing mainly on Instagram stories that, you know, I'm having lasagna minus the meat or enchiladas with vegan cheese, like it's really not hard. I actually think it's easier. I mean, going to the grocery store, you know, when I used to buy meat, you'd have to rush home and get it in the fridge. And then when you'd cook that meat, you'd have to sterilize your cutting board and be a little bit worried that you might have sprayed some E. coli or salmonella everywhere, especially with a baby in the house.
Yeah.
I don't want to have that stuff in my house. So I really do think it's easier. Just cooking vegetables. I also, it's simpler to cook vegetables. Back in the day when I would cook, animal, I feel like you need like a thermometer and you had to have the exact right cooking time and temperature. With vegetables, I always turn my oven on 400, I pop it in, and I just fork test. Like, it's so easy. Did I answer the question? Where was I?
Sure. I know, so Leanna has a question for you, too, that's sort of like on the same vein as this.
Yeah, it's so cool to be here with you today, Erin. I've been following you on Instagram for over a year now, and your account is definitely my top favorite.
Oh, thank you so much.
I love watching your Instagram stories and seeing you tackle all kinds of vegan recipes. It makes it less intimidating for me to try new things. Like last year when you made the crispy buffalo tofu.
Oh, yes.
It made me want to try it, too, and I did, and it turned out amazing.
That's saying a lot for a non-cook.
Really?
Although she's doing more. She's doing more because of people like you.
Well, that's great. Like, even vegans might be surprised at how vegans who don't like to cook, they might be surprised by how easy some things are, even like almond milk.
Yes, which I like that you're repetitive with that, too.
Well, like, they're always new followers, so I have to show them because it's awesome. Life-changing.
And that's one I would like to try eventually. I really find your stories helpful because it can be overwhelming to look at recipes, all the ingredients and instructions, but you just show how easy it actually is and how you do each step. And I've learned to just be more at ease with the process now. Like, you are easy to make substitutes, sometimes depending on just what you have in your kitchen already or how you make adjustments to suit your tastes, but... what are some tips you have on choosing recipes to make and how to ensure they turn out tasty even if you adapt the recipe? Because whatever you make always turns out so well.
Thank you.
Because you're perfect.
Well, no, I'm definitely not, and things don't always turn out well, actually. I actually like to post those things because I think it's only natural that all of us fail sometimes. I mean, even the Michael Kennys of the world, plant-based chefs.
That's a good point.
But, I mean, some tips for always making things taste good is sauce is everything. So you could have a super simple dinner of just like plain quinoa, plain lentils, some steamed vegetables, and then chuck a good sauce on it. I mean, you could do something as simple as olive oil and lemon juice, or you could do something store-bought, like Little Creek Dressing is one of my absolute favorites. They're a family-run company, and they're in the Okanagan, and they might be sold in the States, actually. They're pretty big. But actually, my tahini sauce and my creamy garlic sauce are so easy. They're made with three ingredients. Mm-hmm. I mean, soaked cashews, garlic, and salt, and then water. And you just blend it up, and it, like, makes anything taste good.
You're making me hungry. I know one of your favorites. Okay, something that I saw on your website is you said you eat broccoli every day. Love that.
I get broccoli cravings.
Love that.
If it was after reading the books, right? Like, reading the books and just knowing what it's doing for your body is so motivating.
You can't go wrong with broccoli. And also, one of Leanna's favorites, pesto.
I'm so hooked on pesto these days.
She got pesto from Virtuous Pie yesterday, and she forgot to bring me the leftovers.
Yeah. Well, the pesto, I've been getting that pizza lately.
So
the
good.
The ultraviolet?
Yes.
Is that what it's called?
Delicious.
Yes. So good.
And I got the garlic knots, too.
Oh, I've never had those. Are they new?
Oh, my gosh.
At the Chinatown location, or...
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I have to get
those. They're a side dish during happy hour.
Oh, wow. Yum. Well, your pesto is so easy to veganize. I mean,
yeah, you don't need to put cheese in it at all. Mostly find it with cheese, but I'm always checking the ingredients just to make sure.
Good.
So I'm an ingredient checker. So, let's talk more about the vegan food scene in Vancouver. This is your domain as a food reporter. Now, this week I reposted your top 10 plant-based things to taste in Vancouver blog post, which you had published a few months ago. It reminded me of all the delicious places that we have here in Vancouver, which is just growing so quickly that I can't even keep up with it anymore. You know, I remember the days where we had a total of three vegan restaurants, and it was like that for a really long time.
What were they? Gorilla?
Yeah. Dharma Kitchen, and I probably like Eternal Abundance.
Yes.
So two raw places and one cooked place. And
changed.
That was forever. Yeah, it's changed. So what is exciting for you these days in the Vancouver food scene? And you can say Drunken Cherry Gelato if you like.
Oh my God, I can't get enough. I like, honestly, of any ice cream I've ever tried in my entire life, dairy or non, it is the best ice cream. I mean, gelato. Just in Chinatown
air here.
So,
right?
Exactly. Gelato, it's apparently lighter, but I don't know. It's just so chunky and full of sauces and organic Amarino cherries from Sicily. It's amazing.
So it's in Chinatown. Head over.
Yeah, you got to get there. Turf. I love turf. Turf isn't 100% vegan menu, but everything is veganizable for sure. And I think the only animal products are add-ons, so it's very easy to go there. their food is just beautiful, healthy, big portions, but at the same time rich in a healthy way. They really nailed like the sauces, and they have the most amazing lentil meatballs. They're Auntie Tracy's lentil meatballs.
They have the most amazing Snickers bars too.
Yes,
because she got me one from there too this week.
Oh my gosh. I tried one. They're so good. I need to. Good. I want to make those.
Leanne was saying, "Is this what totally a Snickers bars taste like?" I said, "No, this is way better."
Yes, that's so cool. Yeah, so nice to finally try that stuff.
So you are the mother of a one-year-old, very cute baby named Rowan, and you were raising her vegan. I wonder if you can speak on that and tell us about what your journey has been like to raise a vegan baby and why you decided to raise your child vegan.
Well, I mean, it was just a natural decision to raise her vegan because so many animal products are known carcinogens. So why would I get her hooked on something that is only going to, be bad for her health and the environment? I stress about the environment, too. I mean, the predictions for global warming aren't good right now. So, I picture this earth and, we're passing it along to our children. And so just getting her going on the vegan diet is only going to be good for the planet and everyone. But yeah, she loves it. I mean, I think, as you were saying before, we're all born vegan, and she loves tofu. She gobbles it up. She eats plain, soft tofu, like it's going out of style.
I was reading all the foods that you feed her as a baby, and she eats a variety of foods, probably more than omnivore baby would eat, I would think.
Well, I would agree. She eats, what I eat. Like, I don't often make two meals. We're usually eating the same thing. We share a smoothie. What I'm eating is healthy for her. Even going to places like the juice truck for lunch, she can eat that because it's whole food, plant-based. And, there's not even a lot of sodium. So it's been really easy, too. And I think a lot of moms don't realize that most of what they're feeding their babies is vegan. Bananas are vegan. Yeah. They just don't have the vegan label on it. So,
and a lot of actual prepared baby food out there is vegan.
It's
too,
vegan.
From what I understand.
Yeah, we get the Love Child Organics little grab-and-go pouches, and most of them are vegan. Some of them have yogurt, and there are some of the more savory items that do have some ground-up meat. But it just seems unnatural to feed her meat.
I know. My feeling is, why would you want to put that death into a brand-new being that was just born, right?
Exactly. And so many moms are worried about iron and protein, but it's just, that is like the hardest part about being vegan is, it's just such a big myth that it's hard to get protein on a vegan diet. It's not.
That's a myth, by the way, we're saying.
It is so easy to get enough protein in a day. You don't have to think about it. It's one of the biggest questions that I get on Instagram and email is, how do you get your protein? And what are some ideas for vegan protein sources and iron too? And protein is in every vegetable pretty much.
And for a baby too, I was reading that you said that she just needs to have a third of some kind of oatmeal or something just to get her, is it iron or calcium or both?
Exactly. Yeah. All of these hot baby cereals that you just add hot water to, they're, I think most of them are fortified with iron, because iron is one thing that you should focus on, in infancy. You just a third of a cup, and they've gotten their recommended daily intake. And on top of that, she loves lentils. She loves that tofu. She likes greens.
Her flavor palette is already open. She's not going to be one of those fussy eaters who take it into adulthood who don't want to eat their vegetables.
I hope not. I hope she doesn't change.
You're starting on the right path here.
She doesn't rebel.
We got to meet Rowan last week, and she's so cute. She looks wonderful.
Thanks.
So, also, Rowan got to spend some time with you recently with this sweet baby animal that you were babysitting not too long ago. I saw the pictures on Facebook. This was Blue the Lamb. You took Blue the Lamb to the chicken vigil a few weeks ago. Can you talk to us about Blue's story and where he came from?
So we were so lucky to have Blue as a guest in our home. We babysat him for two nights, and he is a farm animal from Winlaw, BC. He's at Chi Chi Life Farm Sanctuary, run by my friends Patricia and Ernest. They have three kids up there. They live in the mountains. They have over 40 animals. They're amazing. And so they rescued a sheep who was pregnant. And so one morning they went into the barn and they found the mama sheep with her baby. One of the babies was healthy and suckling on her, getting the milk, and then Blue was in the corner cold, and I guess he was the runt and the mother rejected him, so they had to take him into the home and basically domesticate him like a dog, and they're putting a diaper on him and feeding him lamb formula. And so anyways, they came to Vancouver basically to raise awareness about what they're doing up there. They need support. So if anybody is looking for somewhere to donate, they're truly saving these animals' lives. Yeah. And
I got to meet Patricia last week, and we're going to have her on the show. So stay tuned for that. So we're almost out of time here, but I want to make sure that we're able to make a mention of your Mindful Movie Nights. Can you tell us about Mindful Movie Nights and one that you have coming up next Monday?
Yeah, we're so excited. It's actually overbooked. I do the booking and I'm scared. I accepted way too many RSVPs, but I couldn't say no because so many people emailed wanting to come. We're screening The Ghost in Our Machine, and we're going to have the filmmaker Liz Marshall and the protagonist main character Joanne MacArthur of We Animals. She's a photojournalist who documents animals in captivity and animals in factory farms. They're going to be there with us, so it's going to be really special. And I co-host these nights with the Juice Truck at Stretch Yoga in Chinatown, and we do one every 2 months. So we try to mix it up topic-wise, but our passion is veganism, so we post the information on our Instagram.
Okay, and then so you're saying it's booked right now?
But the waitlist is deep.
So your Instagram is Erin Ireland on Instagram, so if people want to find out about Mindful Movie Nights. Okay,
well, awesome.
Thank you so much, Erin, for joining us on the show today to tell us about your life as a vegan food reporter, parent, and activist. Once again, you can follow Erin on Instagram at Erin Ireland, and you're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Yeah. And anywhere else we can find you?
But
your food.
My number.
To die for.
yeah, to die for. It's around the city at about 60 spots.
Okay, well, thank you so much. It's great to meet you.
Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you and Effie have a great day today.
Thank you. You too.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
All right, and we've got some news and events for you right now. I'm going to start with a news story this week that came out. Environmental organization Greenpeace International released a report this week urging that global animal agriculture production and consumption be reduced by 50% by 2050 in order to avoid imminent climate change caused by the industry. Their executive director stated that governments continue to support massive meat and dairy operations, leading to more and more meat consumption, while putting our health, our children's health, and the health of our planet at risk. Instead, they should be supporting the increasing numbers of farmers shifting toward ecological production of healthy foods and helping people access healthy plant-based foods. The report warns that if the agriculture industry continues to operate in its current capacity, it will produce 52% of global greenhouse gases in coming decades, with 70% of that being attributed to the meat and dairy industries. So their director stated that what we decide to eat as individuals and as a society is one of the most powerful tools we have in the fight against climate change and environmental destruction.
Right on. People need to know that, and now it's coming from Greenpeace as well.
Yeah, finally, because, you know, this report comes 8 years after climate scientists at the United Nations released a report urging consumers to go vegan in order to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. And Greenpeace has been pretty quiet about that, you know, over the past 8 years and before that, since the science has been there, you know. So they're finally talking about it. They're taking a kind of a weaker stance on it. You know, there's the science out there indicating that cutting animal consumption in half in the next 32 years is just not enough.
And it can't be ignored. And if you want to get educated, watch the film Cowspiracy on Netflix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's good. They're finally getting the guts to speak up about the effects animal agriculture is having on the planet. And maybe one day they'll even take a stand against the blatant animal abuse involved. Who knows? But anyway, so if you are still hooked on dairy, if you read these reports and think, I don't want to eat this anymore, and you are curious as to how to do that, there's an event happening tomorrow night. Meatless Meetup is hosting a dairy-free event at Vancouver Co-Housing. So come for an exploration of dairy-free foods and a short talk by renowned dietitian Visanto Molina, followed by questions and discussion. Everyone is welcome, vegans, omnivores, anyone. And
we're going.
Yes.
And I'm making cheese.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, now you have to go.
It's a potluck, by the way. Everyone's supposed to bring their, a dairy alternative, and you can either buy, I think, Leanna, you bought something from a store, right?
I did. What did you buy? I bought plant-based cheddar.
Okay, David's cheddar.
Yes. So good.
Cool. You got to get some crackers or something for that. Okay, and then I'm making sun-dried tomato and basil cheese, soft cheese.
Oh, my goodness. That sounds amazing. So, yeah, there you go. Entrance is only $1. And, yeah, they ask that you bring a dairy alternative vegan food item to share. But that, you know, that could be, something fancy that you make, or a $3 carton of non-dairy milk from the store. So super easy, just sharing information
and you
food.
Get access to Visanto Molina. As you said, she's one of the leading vegan dietitians in the world, actually. So she'll be giving a talk.
Yeah, she's wonderful. So again, that's tomorrow, Saturday, March 10th, 7 to 9 p.m. at Vancouver Co-Housing, which is on East 33rd Avenue, just off Victoria Drive. You can find more info and register at meetup.ca/meatlessmeetup.
Meetup.com/meatlessmeetup.
Yes, thank you for that. And another event coming up that I'm looking forward to on Thursday, March the 22nd, Don't Have a Cow Man is what they're calling this event. It's a veggie meat draw and bingo jamboree. I don't know how much time you all spend in bars, but I'm a musician and I wind up playing in a lot of bars. And one thing I noticed when I first started playing here is that these weekly meat draws happen. So it's basically a raffle where people buy tickets, raise money for charity, and they walk home with a chunk of animal flesh. So, of course, I haven't normally participated, but on Thursday, March 22nd in East Vancouver, there will be an animal-free vegan meat draw and bingo and karaoke night at the British Ex-Servicemen's Legion on Kingsway, just east of Fraser. So that's going to be awesome. Money goes to Vancouver Humane Society, and the meats will be provided by plant-based natural products and 3G, which is also delicious. So definitely do come down. Tickets are $10, but no one will be turned away for lack of funds.
That sounds like a really fun event. When I saw that, I didn't know about these. I didn't know about the origination of meat draws. We talked a bit about that before the show. I just thought, cool, there's going to be plant-based meats there. I can't go after work. And bingo, you win for meat, plant-based meat prizes.
Yeah. So it's cool. This is, meat draws are kind of an East Van institution, as far as I've been able to gather. It only happens in Western Canada and some parts of the States and Britain and Australia. And it's always meat. And so I've never participated, but this is going to be fun. So Thursday, March 22nd at the British Ex-Servicemen's Legion on Kingsway.
So our next interview is with lawyer Anna Pippis from the nonprofit organization Animal Justice, which fights for legal protection of animals in Canada. Several weeks ago, animal advocates were shocked to discover that a couple on Vancouver Island who had adopted a rescued pot-bellied pig from the local SPCA then killed, butchered, and ate Molly the pig. They posted Snapchat photos and videos of them seasoning her flesh while preparing to consume her. Anna is here today to speak with us about the legalities of this issue and to also give us a few other updates in the animal justice world. Hello, Anna. Welcome back to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, thanks. It's so nice to talk to you again.
Yes, thanks for coming on the show today to give us some updates. Mm-hmm. Now, I really wanted to have you on to speak about the legal implications of eating your rescue companion animal, whether it would be a dog, a cat, or a pig, as in this case. Molly's guardians not only betrayed her, but boasted about it on social media while doing so. Can you tell us about this and why it's perfectly legal in Canada to eat your companion animal?
Sure. So, you know, once in a while, a really interesting case comes along and captures the public's attention for sort of highlighting the way that our laws fail animals and also highlighting our own, I'm going to use the word hypocrisy, even though I know that's an inflammatory word, you know, in our approach to animals. And let me just explain that sort of term hypocrisy before anybody turns away. What I mean is that our own, we are not living by our own stated values. And that's something that doesn't always bubble up for us, but once in a while, a case comes along, like with Molly, where people really realize, oh, this bothers me. Why does it bother me? Because, you know, for a lot of people who were paying attention to this story, who were horrified, who were outraged, who thought this was really wrong, many of these people were people who do consume pigs. So it's a really interesting way of turning the lens back onto ourselves and looking at, well, if this, you know, what does that mean? What are the implications of this? So taking it, you know, zooming in on the Molly issue, yes, this is what happened was the owners, Molly's new owners, adopted Molly from the SPCA, and they took her home and ate her. And many people were surprised to find out that there are no laws prohibiting this type of thing. So in Canada, if you want to sell meat, you have to be licensed provincially or federally. So that's all governed by, you know, the government is involved basically because of food safety. So if you're going to be selling meat is, there's a lot of food safety concerns wrapped up with meat. It's, you know, rotting muscle tissue, and there's a lot of issues. There's lots of oversight that needs to happen in terms of cleanliness and that type of thing. But in terms of just raising and killing animals, or killing animals for that matter, you can do that. And as a matter of fact, you could kill your pet dog if you like. You could kill a cat. You could do it in your own yard, you know, in full view of the neighbors. As long as it's for your own personal consumption, there are no laws prohibiting the killing and eating of animals. In the case of the SPCA, some people were pointing to, well, wasn't there a contract that stipulated that if the animal could not be cared for, she should be surrendered? And yes, that's true. And the SPCA would potentially have some legal recourse. I think it's more sort of academically interesting than legally powerful, because in law, typically when you sue, you sue for damages. In other words, you sue for whatever it was that you lost to make yourself whole. If somebody has broken a contract with you and it's cost you $5,000, you sue them for $5,000. In the case of Molly, it's not clear, unless it's in the contract. Now, I haven't seen the contract, but unless it's set out in the contract, which it probably isn't, I'm just guessing, but, you know, it probably isn't, then unless it's set out in the contract what the damages would be, then they would have to convince a court that the value of Molly is worth more than her market value. And what's her market value? What was the adoption fee? Maybe $100? So that's what they would be able to recover in court, unless they could argue some sort of novel argument that the SPCA had incurred some sort of mental distress because of Molly, them taking care of, nursing Molly back to health, rescuing her and being in the situation, and then finding out that she had, you know, they came to know this animal and then finding out that she had been killed and eaten. This has caused the SPCA mental distress, unless they could make that case. And bear in mind, I mean, we're talking about not necessarily about SPCA's workers, but the SPCA as an entity bringing forth a lawsuit. So you'd have like corporate mental distress. So, you know, that would be really, for me as a legal nerd, I would like to see that go forward. But you can see how, well, this is really challenging. I mean, you're doing so much hoop jumping at this point to try to get some sort of legal recourse for Molly, that wouldn't it just make more sense if our laws made more sense?
Yeah, it's definitely something to think about when we see how animals are just viewed as property and we're not taking into consideration the actual ethics of killing a sentient being. Now, the only benefit that I can see in this very sad story is that perhaps it has brought the awareness to the public about speciesism and why we favor some species of animals over others when it comes to caring for them and showing them true compassion. We would never think of harming our dog or cat. What would you like to say to our listeners who love dogs but eat pigs, or who somehow think that it's okay to eat an animal as long as they are humanely killed?
Right, well, exactly. I mean, Molly is one of more than 20 million pigs who are killed and eaten in Canada, you know, each and every year. And most of them don't have the benefit of being known and seen as individuals and having names. They're, in most cases, about 6 months old, so they're really just babies at that time. They've never known their families in any sort of meaningful way. They've never experienced anything about life that makes life worth living, like access to the outdoors, the sunlight on their skin, anything really, even fresh air. So really, if somebody is upset by the case of Molly, I would invite them to, you know, turn the lens inward and say, well, maybe I should be rethinking the way that I'm consuming animal foods, because really Molly is a name and a face who represents the countless hundreds of millions of farmed animals each and every year killed and eaten for food. In terms of people who say, you know, because I think a lot of people say, well, you know, I'm against animal cruelty, but I'm not against using animals for food. You know, the sort of like a good life and a painless death, it's fine with me. To that I would say, I would say a couple of things. The first thing I would say is that's not the reality. That basically doesn't exist. So even in the very best of the best, most humane SPCA certified farms, there are still enormous animal welfare problems that most people aren't aware of. So, you know, let's take eggs, for example. Male chicks at birth are ground up alive, are killed at birth because they're of no use in the egg industry. Humane certified eggs are still animals bred to lay hundreds of eggs each and every year, which is very unnatural. People, of course, know that birds lay eggs, a few dozen eggs in the spring each year in nests. You can see it around your neighborhood. While modern chickens have been genetically selected to lay so many eggs that their bones become depleted of calcium and subject to fractures, and they have other sort of ill effects from the enormous strain on their bodies from laying so many eggs. And then at the end of the day, they all go on the same transport trucks bound for the same slaughterhouses. And why? Well, because like we said earlier, slaughterhouses have to be regulated by government. So they're, if you're going to sell the meat. So there's no such thing as sort of opting out of existing slaughterhouses. And I also just want to add to that one thing that I think is often overlooked, which is a point that I can't say enough. It's really important to me, and I think I hope to convince you to make it important to you as well, which is that one of the cruelties that animals endure in the farming system is that they're separated from their families. So again, even in the best case humane scenario, mm-hmm. you don't have animals sort of, you know, naturally living out their lives. All animals, you know, humans, pigs, chickens, cows, are maternal. Mothers give birth to their young, and they have a strong urge to protect them and nurture them and raise them. And in a farming system, even the best ones, that's entirely perverted. So families are separated. Parents don't stay with their young. It's artificial family groupings. And at the end of the day, they're killed. I mean, they have to be killed at a young age, because otherwise it's not profitable to keep animals around to live out into old age. And then once they're, you know, once they've developed some sort of illness or disease, that's not when they go to slaughter. It's at a young age. And of course, you know, their families left behind are missing, or the friends and families left behind are missing them. So anybody who's buying the humane certified stuff needs to know that I think humane is a major misnomer. And I think that a lot of people don't know that, or they don't understand that. They don't really know what's going on. And I think that's really a failure of our labeling laws and our marketing laws.
Well, thank you for that. Now, there is no legal recourse to be had against the person who adopted and killed Molly, so no charges will be laid. But I know that you at Animal Justice are working on something called the Animal Charter of Rights and Freedoms that might be able to help with this kind of thing in the future. Can you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Yes, the Animal Charter of Rights and Freedoms is our model for a better way forward for animals, because one of the serious failings right now for animals is that they don't have any legal standing. So in the case of Molly, we were talking about, I sort of explained the way that a lawsuit going forward would be through the BCSPCA as an entity, as having suffered, you know, mental distress at the loss of this companion animal. Well, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's really silly, because Molly, in her own right, should have some sort of legal recourse for having been, you know, killed and eaten, if we were to create a legal system that took rights and freedoms seriously. So the Animal Charter of Rights and Freedoms, one of the key things that it would do is to give animals legal standing so that they could sue in their own right. We already have this model for non-human entities. So the most famous one is the corporation. A corporate entity can sue and be sued, in fact, just like the SPCA can. And we also have it for individuals within our legal system who are not capable of speaking for themselves. So young children, for example, will have litigation guardians appointed to them, or people who have diminished mental capacity in some way. So our legal system is very well equipped to have non-human entities be represented in court. And our argument through the Animal Charter of Rights and Freedoms is that animals should be able to go through a litigation guardian and have their interests represented.
Well, thank you for that. My sister Leanna has a question here for you.
Hi, Anna.
Hi.
So locally, we have the ongoing issues at the Vancouver Aquarium. Can you give us the latest update in the fight between the Vancouver Park Board and the Vancouver Aquarium in recent weeks?
Yeah, so there's a few things going on with the aquarium. The aquarium has actually been embroiled in two separate streams of lawsuits, which is probably creating a lot of confusion for people. One is that the Vancouver Aquarium tried to sue filmmaker Gary Charbonneau to silence his critical film of his film that was critical of the documentary. That lawsuit has just this week come to an end because in advance of the CEO of Vancouver Aquarium, John Nightingale, being examined under, being examined under oath, they chose to drop the lawsuit. So that is a sort of interesting development and closes a sort of two-year chapter on that whole lawsuit. The other legal situation that the aquarium is in is that the park board decided to ban the keeping of cetaceans in Vancouver parks. And the Vancouver Aquarium sued them to overturn this ban. They were successful, but only because of a contract between the Parks Board and the Vancouver Aquarium. So the ban still applies to anybody else who wants to keep a whale and dolphin in a park. You and I can no longer keep whales and dolphins in parks. But the Park Board can't just because of a contract that it has with the aquarium that lasts until, I think it's 2029. So as of 2029, actually, the ban would apply to Vancouver Aquarium. Nevertheless, Park Board has now appealed that ruling. So that sort of remains to be seen what's going to happen in that case. The Park Board will be appealing to try to say, no, actually, that contract doesn't prevent us from enacting this ban, and this ban should still stand. The Vancouver Aquarium has also this year has said that they will stop keeping cetaceans in captivity, so it's likely a moot point. But again, it's sort of interesting legally to see how this development will unfold, because even though it's really sort of a municipal contractual dispute, there are, of course, these very real live animal rights issues at play, and it's always interesting to see how courts and, you know, the media really and politicians respond to these animal rights issues, and it gives us the chance to play them out in a more public way.
Well, thanks for that update. And finally, just to end here, we love podcasts here at Animal Voices, and I know that Animal Justice has just recently launched a new podcast, which is called Paw and Order. Can you tell us a little bit about this, and how can we listen to it?
Sure, yeah. So Animal Justice this year launched Canada's only animal law podcast, Paw and Order. It is co-hosted by law professor Peter Sankoff, a brilliant mind in animal law. He is a professor at the University of Alberta and has authored and edited, I think, multiple textbooks on animal law. And by Animal Justice's own executive director, Camille Labchuk. And there will be guest appearances from time to time from various other minds in animal law and beyond in Canada. That can be found at our website. If you go to animaljustice.ca, you can see there's a big banner with a link to Paw and Order, so you can see the archives. There's four episodes, so you can check them all out. They're available on iTunes, so you should be able to get them on your podcast app and download them. And if you like what you hear, you can give the show a five-star rating, and that helps other people find it and get more tuned into animal issues. So yeah, and so I should have said from the beginning that the show, the podcast, is really a way of engaging people in animal law issues and making them easier for people to understand.
Well, thank you so much, Anna, for joining us on the show today to speak with us about Molly the Pig and an update on the Vancouver Aquarium issue. You can find out more about the Animal Charter of Rights and Freedoms at animalcharter.ca, and do visit the Animal Justice website to find out more about their campaigns and their podcast at animaljustice.ca. Thank you, Anna. Have a good day.
Thanks so much. You too. Bye, guys.
Bye.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Please join us on our next show, Friday, March 16th, when we'll feature interviews with a local entrepreneur behind a new brand of plant-based dog food. And we'll also have a vegan veterinarian on the show. Who'd have thought? Animal doctors standing against animal exploitation and abuse. It's going to be interesting, so don't miss it. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can stream shows or download the shows as podcasts, read our show blog with detailed links, and subscribe via iTunes. Stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can also send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And to end the show today, we're playing a song. Allison, can you tell us which song we're about to hear?
It's called Be Kind to the Innocent, a song for animal rights. It's by Simon DeBico, one of my favorites.
Wonderful. So thank you all so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.